May 7 of the Close District Plan hearing. Ms. Batson.
I thought Daryl was going to
be. Would you like to step forward to the microphone so you're on the record? And would you like us to adjourn until he arrives? And would you make phone calls and find out where he is?
No, that's fine. We can know that he is. So I, with what I'm reading out, can I give you each a copy now?
That would be a good idea.
So, and I'll just add these underneath it.
I'm Trevor Robinson, the Chair of the Committee. We know Commissioner McLeod, Commissioner Monroe on my left, and we're looking forward to hearing you present your submission.
Thank you.
Yes, Steph. Stephanie is our hearing admin, solutions, and Mr. Barr is the Council Planner of Record. So he is the official representative of the council.
So what I've done is put what I'm going to say in writing, and the way I want to do it is just read it as I have written it.
Happy for you to proceed on that basis.
Thank you. Just as an introduction, I have lived in the region since 1976, and I first bought a home in Lake Awea in 1981, and I shifted to the Grandview subdivision area in 2003, so I've lived in the area for that time. Just in terms of what I do, I've got my ticket in horticulture, and have planted out 8 1-acre lots altogether for other people and myself in the region. I also work in administration, community, social service work, and marriage settlement. Grandview Stage 1, the purchases commenced in 2001. There were 16 4-acre lots. Rural Residential District Plan rules stated then that 23,000 litre water tanks with a permanent 14,000 litre stored for firefighting were required, as were approved septic tanks. Stage 1 had a private water supply scheme from a bore located in Muir Road. It was called the Grandview Water Company, and it delivered the water to 16 lots through a 50mm pipe. I built a home in 2003. At that stage, there were 3 lot owners in Sam John Place building, and they were the only buildings going on for the entire Stage 1. QLSD contacted the lot owners in 2003 requesting a meeting, which was held at the Lake Wanaka Centre. At the meeting, they stated that the Muir Heights subdivision, located at the far eastern end of Lake Awea Township opposite the cemetery, was challenged to achieve sufficient water pressure for household use and firefighting. The subdivision was well underway and also needed to be connected to the reticulated sewage scheme. They believed it would benefit the QLDC, Muir Heights, existing Grandview Stage 1, and potential further Grandview stages if they, Council, could install a water and sewage reticulated scheme through Grandview Stage 1 land and along Cemetery Road for the sewage pipe to go directly to the oxidation ponds in Domain Road. The discussion included QLDC saying that it would be an advantage for Stage 1 to go with their recommendation for us to further subdivide down the track. They also said if we agreed to it, the district plan rules would change for Grandview Stage 1 to no longer be allowed septic tanks and no firefighting tank water storage would be required as fire hydrants would be installed. A decision was reached at the meeting with the lot owners agreeing to the QLDC recommendation and was followed up in writing. It was favourable for Chris Staples, the Muir Heights developer, and for the QLDC as no further houses needed to connect to the existing water and sewerage reticulation along Lakeview Road at Lake Awea. The installation commenced in the winter of 2003 and was completed later in 2003. As a result, after my home in Grandview Stage 1 was completed in October 2003, we were required to use a portalo and were given approval for a large soak pit for grey water until the QLDC scheme was completed. This occurred prior to Christmas 2003 and my home was connected to the new scheme. At the same time, the Grandview Water Company scheme was disabled and disbanded. The farmer watering the cemetery took over all the shares of the company for use on their land. Prior to the scheme installation, the QLDC contacted the 16 owners of Stage 1, stating that as well as the new connection to where our sister water Toby from our private scheme was, we could all have a further water toby and two sewerage connections, not just the one. They provided a map which we marked where we wanted the other connections and returned it to QLDC. Ferguson Brothers also using the name Southern Civil were the contractors. In June 2003, a full 2-day weekend 2020 workshop was held at the Lake Awea Community Centre, achieving large participation. It was a positive experience. I'm just slightly miffed about what has happened there. And the community plan, I'll just put, was agreed by all who attended. The QLDC explained the work they were doing at the beginning of the meeting, installing the new reticulate dated extension to the water and sewerage scheme at Muir Heights and Grandview subdivisions and the intention of it. The meeting was unanimous that the township boundary be Cemetery Road and Muir Roads. There's a little bit of print here that because of the ribbon it's yellow and you can't see what it is, and it's just about some attachments, and that attachment was this community plan, which I imagine you're familiar with as it's on the QLDC website. At the same time as the QLDC was installing the new scheme, three Sandon Place owners, including me, and one Lycan Lane owner decided to subdivide. Patterson Pitts drew the engineering plans for all the properties. One of the requirements was for the subdividers to seal the then unsealed Lycan Lane and Sam John Place cul-de-sacs. A meeting took place with QLDC engineering and planning staff, Patterson Pitts, and the lot owners. It included attendance from the Mayor, Clive Geddes, and the CEO, Duncan Field. QLDC informed the meeting that even though rural residential rules required 50 millimetre water pipes, we would be required to upgrade to town supply size of 100 millimetres to meet further subdivision specifications. They also said the road that Patterson Pitts had engineered would require widening to township size. There were also Caldwell Pitts, manholes and relevant township regulations stated. Patterson Pitts submitted redrawn plans to meet the requirements and were approved by QLDC. Ferguson Brothers also did the physical work of our subdivisions immediately after they finished the council scheme. The township specifications incurred unplanned hefty costs for those of us subdividing, but by then we had no choice really, and as we were encouraged because of being able to further subdivide down the track, we were in agreement and were pleased at the pre-planning to enable further subdivision once rezoning occurred. You might say it was like being dangled a carrot. The meeting I referred to with the Mayor and CEO in attendance also included the QLDC saying they would transfer Sam John Place and Lycan Lane Road to the QLDC ownership and they would buy it from us for $1. A further meeting occurred at the QLDC Wanaka Ward office with the QLDC staff regarding the process over. To take over the road. This became a challenge as Council discovered they did not have a process to make it happen because of Grandview Stage 2 lot owner titles having a share of the road listed on their titles. My neighbour and I paid a lawyer to produce this act in writing, and council did not know what to do, it seemed, so left it. And so what I've included there is from Jane McDonald from Matt Todd, is what she wrote to us, and it includes the list of the Stage 2 owners.
Hi, Daryl.
The Stage 2 owners who had the Lot 31 written on their title, being the road that the sewage and water was going through. The QLSE's Wanaka ward manager, Chris Hawker, said he would get onto it and sent an email saying it was underway, and then a further email apologising, saying he did not have the time before he left the position to complete it. QLSE at some stage followed up with advice about the road, which again proved challenging to take ownership of the roads. And I didn't include that email, which I do have from Chris Hawker, saying that he was getting onto it and he shouldn't see any problems achieving it. And somewhere, Barbara East, who works for council, has a report that council achieved about how the challenges of trying to get those roads put into council ownership. So obviously when we did the subdivision, those of us subdividing did the sealing of the road. I've noticed when my partner Mel Robinson, Mel's sitting here behind me, subdivided a stage 1 4-acre lot, and permission was given by council to provide two connections to the 1-acre lots because of the subdivision down the track. There's an email in there, a small one, from John Hessling. John Hessling, and as I pointed out somewhere in here, at that time council was contracting out, so their planning was with Civic Corp and Intech were the engineers, so it was those people who were attending the meetings. And John Hessling, who was the head terrain for engineering for Civic Corp, when we sent the email to him saying we're in the middle, or Mel did, in the middle of doing his subdivision, and it was 4 acres going into 4 1-acre lots, and what that doesn't include is the email to John saying, seeing as the 2020 plan indicates rezoning and that all of this extra piping we've been putting in with all those joins and cost a lot of money, 100 millimetre pipes, etc. Could we, or could he, add another water and sewage scheme for the 1 acre lots to be 1/2 acre? So John Hessling's response was that he saw no problem with that. Grandview Stage 2, with 17 1-acre lots, was developed in 2004. I think it was 2004. It was very close to 2003-2005 by Chris Street, the same developer of Stage 1. He connected to the new water and sewerage scheme, and Grandview Road was council-owned. A 2-metre-wide walk and cycleway was recreated between Sam John Place and Grandview Road. A 2-metre-wide walk and cycleway had already been created between Lycan Lane and Sam John Place. There are also two further 2-metre-wide walkways that go nowhere at this stage, as they end at fenced private property in both the Muir Heights and Grandview Stage 2, to allow for a link to the lake when further development occurs, or to the Lake Tauri Township. Because of the road and walkways in Lycan Lane and Sam John Place being privately owned by Stage 1 owners, by law, only the residents of Grandview subdivisions can use them. But that is never applied, and many people use them. They are an integral link and very safe for children, either visiting friends or travelling to the school bus stop. Grandview Stage 3 was granted resource consent in 2005, allowing approximately 90 residential-sized sections instead of 24 1-acre lots, as per the rural residential rules. Chris Street was the developer. I submitted saying that it was important that all stages from Stage 1 Grandview through to Timsfield needed to be included to ensure appropriate continuity. It was made clear at the hearing by the developer that the subdivision, Stage 3, which fitted in with the 2020 community plan for the township boundary to be cemetery / Muir Road, and my understanding is the consent was granted based on this. The consent included a wide irrigated belt of plantings along the cemetery road boundary. So the 2020 plan was used regularly during that hearing as a guide the same way that the 2020 Wanaka Plan, etc., has been used for the subdivisions, so that it met. And a point of interest, and you will or may be aware of this, that Grandview Stage 3, owned by Chris Street, is now known as Sentinel Park and owned by different owners. There are a number of people in Stages 1 and 2 who have been waiting for a number of years for the rezoning. They have placed their homes on either half or of the acre or less, based on the 2020 community plan, so they can further subdivide once rezoning occurs. If you drive through Stage 1 or 2, or if you saw an aerial shot, it becomes obvious how many properties have done this. What is apparent and of concern, especially in the hot summer, is the fire hazard from the long dry grass, pine trees, broom, gorse, etc. We all know how quickly a fire can spread in the north or northwest wind, which are frequent in the spring and summer. A fire did occur in 2007 at Muir Heights Residential Subdivision and quickly spread across the long dry grass. Fortunately, Lichen Lane Road ceiling stopped it from jumping to the next property. I maintain the greenbelt as part of a firefighting plan, but many people do not. Many people cannot afford to maintain their properties. These people have not submitted to the district plan review. When I ask them why, they say they did not realise the review was occurring, and many say, don't worry, Joe, it's a given that rezoning will include, as per the 2020 Pauia community plan. You know, the reality is, I know this because I know so many of the people who live there. I think I've counted 60 houses in stages 1 and 2, and they're teachers, plumbers, electricians, refrigeration people, mechanics, on it goes. The number of them have got children, and they're just busy. They're just going for it. They go, oh, just sort it for us, you know, we haven't got time. But they do want it, and I know that that might sound a little bit lame, the fact that they have not submitted to this, but they are more than crossing their fingers. My understanding is some of these owners are waiting for rezoning so they can plan to suit the new zonings. Some people are not sure if or when they will further subdivide. There are 8 owners in Grandview Road, 6 in St John Place, 8 in Lichen Lane, 2 in Muir Road and 8 in Cemetery Road who intend to subdivide. Note that, and Daryl will maybe have it in his thing, that there are 29 accesses off Cemetery Road, and these include existing roads, roads and new subdivisions yet to be completed, driveways and walking and cycle accesses. A new childcare centre is currently being built at Timsfield. The time has come to consider Cemetery Road be 70 or 80 kilometre per hour speed limit. On the 9th of January 2015, a meeting or slash workshop was held by the Hawi Community Association to consider the district plan review. It was broken into groups for residential, rural residential, farming, CBD, etc. Very few families attended, as it was peak New Year holiday time, I think one did. They do not all belong to the HCA, and we're not aware the meeting was being held or what the outcome could mean for them. There was a light mention at the beginning of the meeting when the chairperson said, oh, there is this thing called the 2020 Hawi Plan, which I'm not familiar with, but it has been brought to my attention, and then he put it down. And many people attending did not know about it, as they are new to the community. It was not discussed any further. 3 people facilitating the residential and rural residential groups have submitted personally saying no change to rural residential and leave the residential as it is. These same 3 people were on the executive committee that put the submission in from the HCA, and the HCA submission. Many people were not happy at the time that the HCA did not have objective facilitators at these tables. The submission was approved by this executive committee, with most residents having no idea what was submitted, supposedly on their behalf. Their submission was not sent to the database of the Hawi Community Association. Currently, allowance for colours in the rural residential are different from residential, which is located next to rural residential. When consent is ticked off by council for dwellings, the conditions have to be adhered to, but people repaint, create fencing that is different to what is allowed, and the QLDC have no process in place to follow it up. Rezoning will bring about continuity. And I will just add, you know, we're not allowed to have a red roof, but our neighbour has a red roof, We're not allowed to use white, you know, the 37% reflectivity on colours, and fences are only allowed to be a certain height, but we look, because we look at residential land, at all of those things. And summing up, I request you to please consider the facts I've presented. Most importantly, please adhere to the 2020 Kawe Community Document, which is on the QLD website, and what people believe is the current document. The important fact with the document being is that the Cemetery Newell Road residential boundary line is where it says it is on the map. At the least, the Grandview Stage 1 could be rezoned to a larger lot size of 2,000 square metres, and the subdivisions can be created to look appropriate, the wilding pines and noxious weeds removed, reducing the fire hazard. We have watched Wanaka and Albert Town be almost joined with subdivisions created, and Wanaka spread in other directions with subdivisions. If, I should say, some of us have realised that the QLDC would not follow through with the outcome of the subdivision for us, we would have reconsidered allowing the new water and sewage reticulation to pass through our land. We would have remained on our Grandview Water Company scheme and installed on-land septic tanks and water storage tanks. This would equal far less money spent initially on our subdivisions down to 1 acre, and no rates to be paid for water and sewage in all these years. It is our time. We have been part of the QLDC plan and a local community plan. It is our time, and an agreement is an agreement.
Thank you, Ms. Batson. Well, the last question is being then turned to Mr. Rogers. Can you just, my benefit, explain to me, please? You subdivided your lot. You told us what the sizes are of the people who haven't yet subdivided in stage one. Did you sort of subdivide down to an acre?
Correct. Everyone who has subdivided have gone to 1 acre. And everyone who has subdivided their 4 acre lots have gone into 4 1-acre lots.
And something you can explain to me, please. I think you've listed there are 28 people who would like to subdivide out of what you said was 60 houses.
Not quite, because not all of the land's been built on. Like, there's an 8-acre one that has got no buildings on at all, and two of the 4 acres have got no buildings.
So it's slightly, it's not quite half. Right? The proportion is a little less than it appears, but it's a substantial number. I suppose the thing that's exercising me and is we have a group who are keen to subdivide. Can you give us comfort as to what the views are of the people who don't want to subdivide? Because there is, as you say, the district plan processes can be intimidating. There are busy people who don't understand or don't have the time to participate. And so I'm interested in whether there is a group out there that not only do not want subdivide, but would not be happy about all their neighbours subdividing.
I guess it's a couple of things on that one. And with those numbers that I've given you, of that is people who have, it's in conversation. So there are people who say, well, while I know one lot, who say, while the kids are growing up, we're going to put some horses out there, but we'll subdivide at some time down the track. The other people, they are not sure. I would imagine for some people, and this is particularly if it went down to too small a size, like 800 square metres, that the conditions would be onerous, and they would, you know, wouldn't be able to recoup the money from selling the land to cover what the subdivision costs are. It's a long time since I've subdivided now, but I can only imagine what those costs are and what some of the requirements from council are with regards to driveways, ceiling, turnarounds, etc. So I think that's partly why the 2,000 square metres seems reasonable because that's quite less financially for them. And most people, in fact all of them, have said they really only want to cut it in half because they can cope with maintaining a half an acre. With the people who don't want to subdivide, there are three of them, and I can give you extreme comfort because two of them own houses that I built, and I've had covenants put on those properties for them to not go lower than half an acre. They are at the end of the cul-de-sac. As I mentioned, I have my ticket in horticulture and I work in planting. So I have planted their properties and, as I said, six others in native plants. And I know it's subjective, but it does look really good. There's thousands of plants gone in there, and there's a pretty good continuity. So for them, they're not in a position in a location where further subdivision would bother them because they're just at the end of the line, and it's kind of all done and dusted in a way how it'll be. I do note that one of those people said that they wouldn't disapprove of a granny flat. So if all the people, because the rules currently allow you to build, you know, a garage and a sub, you know, you just got to pay the development contributions, but you can pretty much get self-contained properties, then if people did that, they would still have the same number of people coming and the same number of toilets, etc., added on than if they were subdividing. And for some people, that would be ideal to do it that way with the granny flat because they don't have to pay to do the subdivision and that's how they want to live. So does that answer enough of what you've asked?
Yes, I understand what you say. I suppose the thing that occurs to me is, of course, for those who do subdivide, they still have the option of the granny flat. So you could get, in effect, with that sitting in about a pine, you could in fact double the density if there's room on the property and if the property configured that you could put a granny flat on. Is that a concern to people?
No, because that's to them, that's the result is the same as if a house was built there with it being subdivided. So their preference is to be able to subdivide because mostly the people who have got a lot of children and the reason their properties look a bit like they do is they can't afford to keep it. So by being able to sell, they are going to be able to afford to do the upkeep that is required.
And I was a bit puzzled, and you can help me with this, please, that I suppose you... I was getting mixed messages from you about, well, how well known and well supported is the 2020 structure plan? Because you said you went to an HCA meeting and people didn't seem to know anything about it. But you're relying on it quite a lot. And so is it an historic document, or does the community at large really still buy into that document?
I believe that the community at large buy into the document. I'm trying to be appropriate here. You know, January the 9th, 2015 is not a time to have a meeting. I assure you the hair colour was grey across the room. There were some holiday homeowners. They were mostly a lot of residential people, the farming people. It's the usual story that I see it where we're all looking out for our own backyard, and there of course were some people who were just there to see how it went. My partner Mel would like to be able to speak to that particular thing about that meeting. Can he do that now, please?
Well, just go slow.
Okay.
That I can understand what you're saying, and hopefully we'll have the opportunity to ask other participants, because I know there's at least one person appearing before us who was involved in the HCA. We can ask for their perspective. And I suppose, happy to hear from your partner briefly, but I suppose what I'm really saying is, you don't have to belabor the point. I understand what you're saying about how that might have come about. But go back to my question, which is, to what extent is the structure plan a living document that people know about, understand, and buy into?
Can I just ask that question?
Just one at a time.
My understanding, because I do talk to the people in the stage one and two area, is that they are familiar with it, and the reason they are familiar with it is because I tell them about it and I've sent them the link to it. I think a number of people who, because the newer people to town, are not familiar with it. It's the usual story. If something affects them, they don't pay too much attention. I think what really is integral at this point about this document is that, and I know you say you get it, but when this document was waved about at the meeting, and then what I have read in the submission from the HCA, because the Southern Planning people included the, a bit of a rewritten form, is that it's when this 2020 occurred back in 2003, it was well advertised. It had a very large participation for the number of people who were there at the time. And so if any local community group is planning to review a document and redo it, basically, in any form, change one word even, it needs to be agreed upon by the people who have participated. So this was not that meeting in January the 9th was not advertised in any way as being a meeting to look at this document and review it. And so you'd have to have a similar style workshop as the one that was held in June, and it would have to have significant presentation at the beginning of it of how this came about and a whole lot of statistics on what's happened since then for the community to then draw up a new document, which could be called 2030, 2050, and in a way it is time. And I just will add, of course, that at that particular point it is 2017, and so this boundary line is, the time has come for it. There is one other significant thing in there, Mel might remember it, of what they said in the plan. And it just, that's what happens when you start.
Well, I understand you'd like your partner to speak, but I want to go to the other commissioners now, and so we'll do them one at a time. Ask them if they've got questions of you, then hear from your partner, then hear from Mr. Rogers.
Okay, so what is included in there that I will not read out, and now I need a bit of clarification from you guys, please, is that I have included an email in there, but there's one from Cliff O'Connell and Jeremy Van Reel. They go, oh God, we should have put in a submission due. So they have sent an email about wanting to subdivide. Liana Poole, there's an email there from Liana. She borders the new Sentinel Park and has five houses going to be her neighbour. So she wants, it's obvious, and we'll read her email. I have another one here from another person who didn't get a submission, and Ross Palmer, and I haven't copied it three times, I've only got one copy.
If you give us a steal, she'll take charge of it.
Yeah, and I think you would prefer if I didn't read this out.
Correct.
Thank you. But what I would like is, over here we've got Naomi and John Cooper, and I had asked for perhaps some people able to speak, and Mel and John Cooper are stage two, and they have done something briefly in writing, and they've ordered a new subdivision, and they would like to have a very brief time to be able to speak. Because those emails, and Mel and John, are people who, it's as good as it gets for now, of the people who want to be able to subdivide.
Well, let's do one at a time,
Commissioner Munro.
Thanks. One of the things we've been thinking about is the age of the RWA plan, the 2021. To the best of your knowledge, though, the council hasn't made any decision to withdraw it or distance itself from any of the outcomes that were expressed way back in 2003 or anything like that, has it?
No, in 2005, with the resource consent went through, council, you know, gave approval for the commissioners to make the decision.
In terms of your submission, one of the things I just want to be crystal clear with is exactly what it is you're asking. So, first of all, you'd like us to effectively upzone Grandview Stage 1 and Grandview Stage 2?
Correct.
Both. And you've talked, just in your comments here, about enabling a 2,000 square metre minimum site size, so effectively allowing those acre sections to be chopped in half. Is that what you're asking, or are you asking for higher density, or what was it you want?
The answer to the or is that I thought that because Tim Seale's residential, so when you go along there, you've got your Tim Seale residential, and then they've got an area of land rural residential that is to be included, and they want, of course, made into residential, and that meets up with Sentinel Park, which is now in the process of right now being made into the 90 lots. So I thought that council would prefer to have the whole thing residential to one end, and then they've got one set of rules.
Okay.
And that's where I came from with that. Because I'm not fazed if it goes to quarter acre sections or 2,000 square metre sections. I'm fazed if it remains at 1 acre.
So, what I'm hearing you say is that there's a range of outcomes that would be okay. 2,000 at the minimum, but maybe even more. So you said you think if
I think, hang on, just a point there, I genuinely think that looking at it, because what we've got is a bit of a dog's breakfast and a potential for a massive dog's breakfast. So if we're looking at it as it is now, trying to spur the subdivide some of the sections, and I mentioned it before, apart from it being onerous financially, it could aesthetically not look so great. And it would make sense to do it in less, and that would be less on all of the services, etc., etc. And I think particularly if you look at the edge of that, then it creates a semi-soft urban edge.
Well, I know you're describing the blood I'm pulling my toes, but I want to press you a little bit on this, because for us it's essential that we understand exactly what people want, especially in this instance, because there are some other subdivisions that don't think things should change. So you've said 2,000 square metres, then you've also referred to some of the other subdivisions that are going on, and maybe if they were more consistent, that would be okay too. So do you know what some of the site sizes are that are being established next door in Central Park?
Yes, and they range from 800, because they can't go less than that, to 1,200. That actually, Mel and John have got a plan with them of that subdivision. And I do know from looking at Willow Ridge's sub-plan for Timsfield that they have included some 600 and some size sections. My understanding is that that's trying to be worked through with council at the moment. And because 800 is all that is allowed, however, I did find myself thinking, well, it's not such a silly idea to have some high density at the Timsfield end, because that's part of that whole affordable housing thing.
Sure. So 2,000 is okay, down to 800 might be okay, but might also have some problems in terms of the character and cost.
Right? You know what? 800 wouldn't be okay.
It wouldn't be okay.
I
okay, I'm getting there.
Yeah.
We're finding that sweet spot.
I think when you look at Pip and Liana's and the one over that you've been, Ross Palmer's, they're all saying the 2,000.
Okay.
And so I would favour 2,000.
Okay. Thanks for that. I hope you can appreciate it. We don't want to make a decision disagreeing with you by thinking you wanted something that was actually different from what you wanted.
Yeah.
I don't have any other questions. Actually, no, I do have one more question. So I just want to reiterate with you, what you said in writing. So those roads that have been built, they're privately owned, but they've been built to effectively cancel public road standards. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Yeah,
okay. So for those of us who are the lot owners, I can clearly remember seeing us in this room, and I have hoped what I've put in here and read out, that you guys get the picture of how, you know, big this all was in a way for us at the beginning, and that we're 14 years down the track.
And when you talked about the council agreement to two sewage connections, etc., was that just an agreement that was reached, or do you know if a number of those lots have actually been built with two connections?
So when they got in touch with us, it was around the time that the installation occurred. So that's when they, you know, we were kind of like, wow, that's really nice. They came to us, so most people took them up on it.
Right, so how much a site sanitary and sewage connection?
Yes, and right. That meant that when you subdivide down to the 1 acre, there was already one there that did not have to be put in. And now, like on the lots that Mel did, an extra one got put in. So there's 1 acre lots, some 1 acre lots with two connections.
Okay, thank you for that.
Including
mine. Yeah, just obviously the gist of the whole document is an agreement's an agreement. So your understanding, or the group of people here's understanding, is that we've been working towards this with council over many years, which is the basis of the what you're asking for down to the 800 to 2000.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems reasonably clear that your understanding is that that's the way that it's been heading anyway. So why would you change it? Sort of thing. But also, if you look at the aerial view of Sam John Place and Lycan Lane, they do seem to be heading towards meeting. Is that something that would ever happen in you? Or
no, when the original subdivision plan was put in by Chris Streets for stage one, Sam John Place and Lycan Lane was one road.
Yeah.
But for him to achieve that one road, he had to seal it. I have a smirk on my face, as I say, his decision then was to separate it, because that way he only had to have gravel. Made it a lot easier on his wallet. And therefore, the connection, the walkway between St John Place and Lycan Lane was connected, which is marvellous.
Yeah. That walkway is, you were saying, 2 metres wide?
Yep.
There's no easement or road reserve that would actually connect those two together.
No,
it's all private land.
It is.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. It is.
And the same if you go to the end of Sam John Place, it sort of curves up and it looks like it's almost meant to meet Grandview Road.
It does meet Grandview Road.
But again, that's a walkway.
It's a walkway. And off note, the Sam John Lycan Lane walkway, as I've mentioned, is owned by the stage one owners,
mm-hmm.
and the one from St John Place to Grandview Road is half owned by the stage one landowners, and because council owns Grandview Road, it legally owns the walkway from Grandview Road to about halfway along, and then a walkway that goes up that meets to the residential area of the lake. And it may not be.
And that walkway goes into Marine Place, does it?
That's right.
Yeah.
And so the people who own those two properties, they have planted and fenced their properties for the 2 metre walkway to go up. And then Sherilyn and Walthew and Dr. Pickles, they own the land there. And so the walkway would then go through their land when they decide if they want to, and that would head up into Marine Place.
Right.
At the end of Grandview Road, right, where the new Sentinel Park one is going,
yep.
So that walkway there would lead to Capel Avenue. So currently, Capel Avenue ends, but there is a paper road from it, which is, and that's going to be the end of the Timsteel subdivision, and that will become Capel Ave. It will be a through road from the lake down to Cemetery Road.
Yep.
Currently, a walkway has been put in there, but the Grand View subdivision link will be able to link into that walkway. Very kindly, some people who live in the Nicholl Street Park walkway that borders Centenary Park have a gate and they always allow everyone to walk through there.
There you go. I think dog's breakfast was the term you used. It certainly has that ring about it. One last question was the 2020 process, and part of this has been looking, and I think it's the Hawea Community Association application has been looking at putting an urban growth boundary, or the potential for an urban growth boundary round, which is Muir Road Cemetery Road, but it also includes, I think, a little triangle on Domain Road that maybe Chris Street originally subdivided.
Correct.
It sort of looks like, is that a, because that would have to be included, obviously, because it's a pre-existing subdivision.
That's an interesting one, because, you know, some people who might die in the ditch over things would say that Cemetery Road is Cemetery Road and not allowed.
Yeah.
But I think when you look at this 2020 plan where it says, it refers to things like the rural lifestyle down at Hawea Flat could become rural residential. It talks about a green ribbon area, and that if any further subdivision occurs, it's in hamlet or cluster style. So I do see that land that Chris Street owns, that borders the walking track, the school walking track, and Domain Road, or the two properties by there, as being reasonable for it to be able to be rezoned.
So,
heaven help us about what size Chester chosen for it.
Yeah. But the urban growth boundary doesn't necessarily, Cemetery Road's not necessarily that proverbial lane in the sand.
I think for some people it is, and it could be, I do think that for some people it is, but I'm not sure how many.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I know that Chris thought from the, when we did this, that how many are there down there? Is 1 acre lots.
Yep.
At one stage he put them on the market and then he withdrew them.
Yep.
And I figure he's just waiting that further rezoning will be favourable for him.
That's all, thank you very much.
Just circle back. You described to us the problems when you tried to discuss it with council to convert Sam and John's place in Lycan Lane to public roads because they were owned by multiple landowners. So that is still the position, that they are still private roads owned by multiple members of the original subdivisions. Were not original members, but the now owners of what was originally subdivided.
Correct. And my understanding, and from what Jane has put there, is that people in Stage 2 on their titles all have some words regarding that, and that would need, my understanding is that means changing those titles and how do you go about it. But of course, for those of us who were there at the meeting, Clive said, okay, what we need to do is buy these roads. We need to get these roads into council ownership, and we can do it. How do we do that one, Duncan? Do we do it like by a dollar? You know, we pay you a dollar. And Duncan was nodding, and so we all left going, great. Because they said, we'll follow that up and let you know.
Barbara
East can give you plenty of information on that.
The thing, like, I'm happy with that I understand the history. The thing that's exercising my mind is, because it's a council requirement that once you get over a certain number of properties accessing a private way, it has to be a public road. Are you going to be snookered, even if the land is rezoned, are you going to be snookered by the fact that you need every landowner's agreement to satisfy that requirement to turn those accesses into public road?
Oh, hey, look, I liken it to those chaps who get to the moon. You know, where there's a will, there's a way. And I think it's, I'm of a full glass person. I just think council can work to make it happen.
Yeah.
again, okay, and I say, right, an agreement's an agreement.
Yes, but equally, those people have a property interest in that road, and while there are, well, I suppose in theory, the council could compulsorily acquire those property interests, that would be a major exercise. Do you think that unanimous agreement would be possible?
Yes.
Just write down some notes and make sure I've got this for posterity. Saving listening to Tony.
I will forward Stephanie the email from Chris Walker about the road. Chris Walker was the Wanaka ward manager.
And now he's waiting for OIC.
Now, Ms. Batson, you said that you had with you a couple of people from stage two who wanted to speak briefly on, you think that, like, because it's your submission, they're speaking on your behalf, so just you understand the process. Well, I wonder if you could introduce them now, the step forward, we'll listen to them. And so, while I understand that your partner might have something to contribute about the ACO meeting, I think I understand where you're coming from, and we don't need more material to back up what you've already said.
Thank you. Okay, so,
Melanie
and Tony. Cooper from Greenview Road. I think they prefer you to come up to...
Yes, if you could... we've got plenty of chairs.
Oh, yeah. Can I just...
Okay. So it's just our property outlined on the red.
Okay.
And then the white is the Easington Park. And on this one is where the two properties are going to be from the house.
And it's okay now, later today, we're about
how we're going to get it. Hey, we're very chill with you.
Thank you. My name is Melanie Cooper, and I'm from John Cooper. The people we bought our house from positioned it, allowing for further subdivision based on the 2020 Hawea Community Plan. Because the Sentinel Park subdivision was granted approximately 90 lots by resource consent, rather than the 24 one-acre lots if it were rural residential. This has resulted in our property being bordered with two residential size sections. We have approximately 3/4 acre to subdivide and to blend in with the Sentinel Park development. We believe we should be included in residential rezoning to blend into Sentinel Park. At least we would agree on being able to subdivide to 2,000 metre squared sections. This was always part of our plan since we purchased the property, and this would mean a lot to John and I and our four kids.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Cooper. Mr. McLaren?
No, that's a graphic photo, by the way. It really is.
And just to help me, Mrs. Cooper, sorry, you... And the road coming in with the like an S bend, is that yeah. St. John Place? No.
No, we're on Grandview.
You're Grandview?
Yeah.
Thank you.
So we're back onto the new Sentinel Park. So we've got
the green and the red line.
Yeah, so the red line
outlines
our section. And as you can see, our house is built with a berm around it.
And you got the walking track coming in to almost directly opposite your house, is that
yes,
right?
Yes, I would have
Can I ask a question to the children? If in the grand scheme of things, the dog's breakfast was council decided that we were going to, or council was going to decide that they were going to continue Sam John Place into and do the compulsory purchase order and do the process, whatever, however long and tortuous it was, and end up with a road coming in there. How would you feel about that? Instead of a walkway, I suppose.
It wouldn't really bother us too much because we're quite private where we are. We've made our house quite private.
That's it. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much for steeling yourself to do that. We appreciate hearing from you.
Thank you.
Just as a point there, next to on that map, next to the where Mel and John have put the line around their property, the email from Leanna Paul, she's the property next to them, and she's the one who's getting 5 new neighbours from Sentinel Park.
She's not right next to
her. She's one of
them. Oh, sorry, she's one section away from Mel and John's.
Now, if you just give us a moment. Steve, what exhibit are we up to?
I was just going to come and grab that one off you as well. That'll be number 22.
Oh, yes. So this is Central Park, this is exhibit 22.
Yeah.
And the Cooper's plan will be exhibit 22. Are we ready to hear Mr. Rogers now?
Yes. I was just wondering if you wanted me to point out a couple of things on those maps. I think you can see clearly that all of those properties on that side of the road from Grandview Stage 2 have now got a whole lot of residential properties beside them.
Yeah.
And they, I only know of one of them who's not planning to subdivide.
One further question for me. The on the Sentinel Park thing, there's a wee red line. That's your border of your
boundary.
Yeah,
that's our border, and I'll be the 2 months.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're not the first. can I say, we have had others who've phoned in and say, where are you?
They're just copies of my 2 submissions, the first submission.
We've got them and we've read them.
Yep.
So can I ask, unlike the past we haven't seen before, don't read it back to us.
Good.
If you could pick out the highlights from your perspective, and then we'll ask you some questions.
So this is, I guess, an answer to your question to Ms. Faxon earlier about how does the community look at the 2020 vision. Unlike Jude and like the Coopers, we purchased into Sam John Place after it had been subdivided. And one of the things we did refer to, we looked at the way it had been set out, the way the houses had been positioned, and we referred to the 2020 document, which specifically says in black and white, and it's the first key strategy within the 2020 document that the areas bordering Cemetery Road and Muir Road should be changed to town zoning. It doesn't say could or maybe, it actually says should. The wording is quite clear. So when we're making long-term financial decisions for our family, we base our decisions in part with what the documentation is that the council has. Also, as far as whether this document is a living document, it is on the QLDC website. If you do a quick Google search, Harvey Community Plan, it pops up, and it's easy accessible to everyone who wants to read it.
Thank you.
So I guess with what I want to put forward this morning is, with the original submission and the rebuttals that came back from council, I found the rebuttals factually incorrect, and a lot of it was in direct opposition to both the community plan. Some of the quotes that were used by it was, I guess, used out of context, referring to the area outside of the development boundary, rather than the actual what the community plan has said. Also, this included my first submission, there's multiple areas, multiple key strategic policies and strategies that the council has set up, which are able to be viewed on the council website, which refer to proper use of infrastructure, affordable housing. There's quite a lot there. And this submission and this request actually complies with every single one of them. There's nothing in conflict.
Mr. Roger,
yep.
You don't mind the question having interrupted you.
Yep.
I'll ask you if you mind me interrupting.
Yep, that's fine.
Which is a bit late. We've had a lot of people trying, supporting their applications for upzoning on the basis that the government's now got a new national policy statement for urban development capacity, NPSUDC, for its friends, and they've all said, well, we've got this big push, more housing, and we also have separate evidence that there's a lot of housing capacity enabled by the plan, but to the extent there might be a deficiency, it's what we call affordable housing, which might or might not be separate housing, it might be apartments, but it's not. It's not a 400 square metre palatial residence on a hillside overlooking the lake. Is that what we're talking about? You've used affordable housing.
Yes, one of the problems with affordable housing, and excuse me if I get a bit passionate here, the aim to bring lot sizes down to 400 square metres or 600 square metres is just ridiculous, because we'll put things on the market with what the market will bear. So if you have a $400, 400 square metre section, 600 square metre, they'll price it at what the market will bear, and they'll get the biggest dollar they will. And what that does is it puts a flaw in the development of the area, and it means those on lower incomes, that's going to be what they can afford. That's going to be the floor of what they can have. So affordable housing should not be, it becomes unaffordable in that if on a square metre basis, those blocks are extremely expensive, and what you can build on it becomes quite constrictive because it's got to be potentially double storey. So affordable, the way it's structured is completely incorrect. What needs to happen is that the council should have a much larger area, because rather than looking just 10, 15 years in advance, they should be looking 50 to 75 years in advance and putting larger swathes of land up for potential development and enabling a lot more, as it says in the strategies in the council, is to have as many landowners affected by rezoning as possible to get some competition in the market. At the moment with developers, they will drip feed land. So there's lots of land, and one of the replies and one of the rebuttals is that there's sufficient land in Lake Hawea for future development, but it's no good if it's there but it's not brought to market. And to enable more of this to be brought to market, you need to make sure that more landowners have the ability to subdivide and bring it to market, so there's competition, and there's basically, you want to basically a surplus of land hitting realestate.co.nz, so people have more options, they've got more choice, more variety of lot sizes, rather than the 400 square metres or 600 square metres now are becoming the norm in Wanaka.
Yes, I interrupted you. Thank you for that answer, but carry on.
Yeah, that's okay. So unlike June, our family have come in after the fact, so Jude's got some great history behind it, but I'm just going to talk about what we've come in, and also looking at the rebuttals. So Jude's touched on it early. One of the issues was the infrastructure. Currently the infrastructure on Kindle DCs, own evidence is 50% underutilised. The evidence brought forward in rebuttals says that the infrastructure could handle 2,000 metre sled lots. They said it may not handle the smaller lots, but that being said, insufficient investigation has been done on that because there's no quantifiable evidence there to make that decision. As far as roading is concerned, San John Place, Lycan Avenue, Grandview, they're as wide as the roads we have in Wanaka. San John Place, for example, is 5.6 metres wide. Places like Kirimoko Crescent in Wanaka, which is a much higher density, is only 5 metres wide. Grandview as well, is the current Grandview Road will be connected to the new higher density subdivision, so that road will be having additional traffic on it as well. So the infrastructure that's there will be able to cope with additional subdivision. Also, as Jude has mentioned, the Cemetery Road, at the moment, has got 29 different intersections, driveways, bus stops there. Having it 100 kilometres an hour at the moment is ridiculous, and this change of zoning would be great impetus to get that down. There's a lot of children riding their bikes to school and bus stops and things like that. So from a safety perspective, that should, I guess from an infrastructure perspective, should be no roadblock to rezoning. I guess as well as on the road widening, pretty much every other intersection in that area does not have a right-hand turn base. So Muir Road and Cemetery Road, Cemetery Road and Domain Road and Timsfield. None of the roads in Harwea District has a right-hand turn base. So that was another one of the items on the rebuttals, which sort of said would have to be investigated from just a cursory glance at how it's structured at the moment. There's no room there to San John Place or like you to have that difference. As far as from an ecology perspective as well, there's only exotic grasses on these lands, so from an environmental and ecology perspective, that's just a bit of a no-brainer. I guess one concern I really had was the comment in the rebuttal that the council is under no obligation to enact community plans, which I found surprising in that if the council is not obliged to enact community plans, what is the point of those community plans? If there's no, especially when the community plans themselves ask, say in black and white that the QLDC should take them into account.
Can I cut the chase?
Yeah, cut the chase.
Not you. Yep. On that point, I think the council's position is an accurate statement of the law, that the structure plan is not binding on it. But could I put words in your mouth and say that your position would be, if it's not binding, it should nevertheless follow the plan?
Yes. Because otherwise, what is the point? If the community plan is put together, if the council does not, it just ignores it, there's absolutely no point for the community to spend the time, effort, and resources to put it together. Okay. The council's just going to overrule it. So, and I guess one of the, I don't really want to rehash what I've written because it's just what we're talking about. But in the rebuttals that the QLDC provided, I had quite a lot of arguments there, and most, about half of them were not even referred back to. So I'm just going to read them out, just so it's on everyone's mind. So that the proposal is in line with the QLDC, sorry, the Harvey Community Plan, its 2020 vision. It's proposed in line with multiple QLDC strategic goals, objectives and policies. It will provide much needed land stock to relieve price pressures and increase competition in the market. It offers great flexibility in building options so that sustainable and recycled material can be used. And I must say, with this one, it's just a key one as far as affordable housing is concerned. A lot of the houses in this area, covenants that apply to subdivisions, basically negate the ability to people to build affordable housing. Housing costs $2,000 a square metre at the absolute minimum. This area, because there are no covenants in that regard, people can relocate houses from Christchurch and things like that. So you've got the whole recycling, sustainability argument there, and also the fact that it's a fraction of the cost of building brand new. It also enables people that have been affected by Christchurch earthquakes or developing in high density areas in cities to get rid of their properties. 800 metre square minimum lot sizes, unlike what we have in Wanaka now. I wouldn't want to see anything smaller than 800 square metres. I think anything less does not give families and growing families enough space, and we've got more than enough land. It's just the fact that we've got none that has been brought to market. It allows optimal utilisation of existing infrastructure. And as Judith said, and this has been seen from sort of Google search, the landowners' homes have already been positioned with expectation of future rezoning. This also reduces and delays the need for development of greenfield sites. It's quite frustrating to see the greenfield sites within the development window being developed, with new infrastructure being in place when infrastructure in our own development is only 50% used. It's really poor use of resources. And I'd say as well, with landowners that may be in objection to this submission, this has always been in the 2020 document. I would say that when you purchase, if you're making a major decision on, the most important investment, you should be doing your due diligence and reading what the future intentions are of the council. And I don't think, if people that have not done that due diligence and seen what the council and what the community are looking for to happen with areas within that land, those people should not then hold the other landowners who have done their due diligence, to ransom about then sort of backtracking on what the long-term aims are. They are under no compulsion to subdivide. They can go about their quiet enjoyment of their land. Most have two to three metre hedges around their properties, and if they don't decide, a rezoning would greatly increase the value of their land anyway, so they'd be more than recompense. That's in, contrast to the blocks that are owned, Sentinel Place. Those landowners have not been recompensed. The land that is sold, that is bordering their properties, is actually sold at a premium by the developer because they're bordering rural lifestyle sections, so they're bearing all the cost of that development with none of the benefit. So I think that's about the summary, but I would have to say the rebuttals brought forward by the QLDC were quite poor, factually incorrect as far as the connectivity of the roading, and the conclusion based on the quantifiable and objective evidence. I don't understand how they got to that conclusion, because the objective evidence was very much in favour of further infill development, and the only evidence that could be brought forward was a purely subjective one about soft and hard edges to the development, which is just a purely subjective opinion.
I get it, right.
Thanks. I do have some questions. So does Maxson helpfully confirmed that in her view a zone that allowed for sites of 2,000 metres would be okay? What's your view on that?
I prefer 2,000 rather than no subdivision. I think you could probably potentially go lower.
To what?
To, I would say, 1,200. I think that's, if you look at the size of the sections, if you've got a quarter acre, most of them are about square. You can't really cut them up in quarters and have it really cohesive. I think 1,200 enables a good size, because 4,000 divided by 3, it's not going to be 12, it's going to be more like 1,500.
I was just like, give that man a calculator.
Yeah.
if we found ourselves in agreement with the 2,000 litre minimum, is it your understanding that that would give someone in possession of an existing 4,000 litre section two titles, each of 2,000 litres, on which a landowner could then put a house and a separate residential flat that could be rented out or used by relatives on holidays or whatever. Is that what you would understand would result from a 2,000 minimum?
That would pretend it's able to be done within the district plan, so people might take advantage of it. Because some of the blocks are actually 4,000 meters square, I think that it'd be quite dangerous just to go to 2,000, simply because with, you know, easements and things like that, or, you know, if anything had to be done, those people may not be able to subdivide because, they've only got 1,999 metres squared, and all of a sudden they can't subdivide. So
yeah, okay.
I think that is probably cutting it too close.
We're, one of the issues that I'm trying to work through is that the invitation is for us to rely on the Hawea 2020 plan.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't say 2,000 metre sites. It didn't say 1,200 metre sites.
No, it said
1,200 sites, which is 800 metre sites.
Yep.
And we've been told by Interstates and nothing to sell, but that might not be the right answer. So then we find ourselves in a problem where we say we agree with you to use the Hawea plan, but then we don't agree with the Hawea plan.
No, I mean,
so
I
don't. How do we navigate that?
Okay, so from my perspective, the Hawea plan says town zone. Mm. So that's what should happen. How that actually is able, because one of the concerns is, you know, how dense it will be. And because of the additional title that they are, just from purely what landage a landowner has, they're going to be constrained in what they can. So yes, it could be zoned town zoning, but they're not actually physically going to be able to get it down to 800. So you're going to, it's actually quite a good problem to have, because you actually won't be able to get down to the 800. You'll still get large blocks with lots of space, lots of free room.
So do you think then, there could be what could be described as compromise? Do you think it would be reasonable, do you think, for us to say, for instance, we agree with these submitters that correctly showed us how we plan, and they referred to the council's own infrastructure evidence saying at least some intensification could occur. It could be that we might also agree in part with those submitters that don't want much more density and don't want lots of change. And it could be that something between a 1,200 to 2,000 might could be argued as being the practical middle point. Mm-hmm. It says maybe the township zoning opportunity is gone because, as you say, there's a pattern now that's happened in the meantime.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe the right thing to do now going forward is that. Do you think that would that be something you feel would be a fair way of us dealing with your submission? Or?
Yeah, definitely. I think it would, because the practicality is it's going to be difficult to get to that 800.
Mm.
But I think it suits everybody for it to get that middle way.
I think to be fair to Mr. Barr, and I'm not going to, certainly it's not my role to defend him from the criticism made of his evidence, but I do think when I read his evidence, I felt that he was in part criticising the potential for 800 square metre sites or less. And fairness, I think. Do you think that would be a fair?
I would, but the problem is there was no middle ground.
I agree.
So if I've got a choice between 800 and nothing,
sure. I would
choose 800.
Sure.
If I, and that's, you know. But there was no mill grounds, so you didn't leave that open as an option. So then,
well, if you're always listening to you here, yeah. Very long and hard about your eventual sort of excellent. Okay, look, I've got another Christmas thing.
Question, Ken. No, I see they think we traversed this.
Wow. Well, I actually would, but just to say one thing, I just admire the fact that your kids come along and sat through this entire proceeding. They're probably the youngest presenters by at least 30 years.
Yeah.
And they're a bit of...
This is their local government power listing.
Good luck there. One of the benefits, Roger, is going second is that the pioneer gets all the tricky questions. So I have no questions for you.
Okay,
thank you very much for you, Spanson, for Coopers, for coming to share your views with us. We really appreciate the considered way you put it. And Mr. Rogers, I appreciate you taking on board my concerns. And we swapped emails by Ms. Prendergast.
Just turn the volume down a bit.
Thank you for getting the message and for responding constructively.
No, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Can I just add one thing?
Certainly.
Can. To this plan, one of the things that has been, and again, if you look at the way the houses have been positioned, the real estate agents have advertised properties there with potential to subdivide. So that's another reason why people know this plan. And I find it interesting with the plan because these plans, whether they're Wanaka 2020, Luggett 2020, Cadrona 2020 and the Queenstown ones, they can conveniently come out to suit, you know, whatever it is that is going down and have the rejection from the other side at times. And, yeah, we know that happens.
Slippery slope, suggesting that we should take notice of what the real estate agents advertise can and cannot be done around the district. Commissioner Fowler is telling me that the local real estate agents are remarkably inventive.
And if council, given that the 2020 plans are not a statutory document, I think there's a great progression down that slope to get the real estate agent.
Tony Barchley, better lawyers, of course.
Can I just ask, do you go and look at the area?
We already have.
Oh, right. I'm sure the person who has 8 acres on the corner of Newell Road and Cemetery Road would just be wishing that they were here, saying, no, 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 800, I haven't started on mine.
I just say thank you everyone for attending. Well, adjourn the hearing for morning tea. Restart hopefully at 11:45. Thank you.